Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Welcome to Three in the Key.
I mean, like, if you don't come with this pissed off after you lose every, like, any game, after if you're not pissed off that you lost, man, something's wrong. This is your job. This is what you're supposed to love to do. And I don't think that everybody looks at it that way.
Bringing you in-depth basketball analysis and interviews from the Great White North.
Harden with a quick trigger and a good decision. The beard starting to heat up. James Harden with another 50-point game. That's 50 points, 13 assists, 13 rebounds.
Did you just say another 50-point game?
Yeah. Well, in any language, James Harden gets buckets.
With your hosts, Elias Elzain, Will Macklin, and Dave the Professor Tripp.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Three in the Key. Elias Elzain alongside Dave Tripp.
Yeah.
And Will Macklin.
Cricket.
What? Oh. I look over to my right where he usually sits, and he's just, not there.
Just darkness in that corner right now.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Darkness.
Will Macklin.
Reminds me of Boo Radley.
Boo Radley. You don't want a neighbor like that. Actually, you do want a neighbor like that.
Yeah.
Read the whole book. Not so creepy after all.
Is that because, you know, he's always in the dark?
It's true.
Yeah,
he's kind of creepy.
Felt the reference there.
You break your arm, you want him around, let me tell you.
We'll start this show off with James Harden, who's been killing it. Hey,
oh,
you
man.
James Harden, 51 points, 13 boards, 13 assists. For the Houston Rockets, 123-118.
That's ridiculous.
Win over the Sixers on Friday night. He became the first player in NBA history with more than one 50-point triple-double in a season.
I like how that's become a stat. 50-point triple-doubles.
Because of James Harden, he's done it twice this year.
It's ridiculous.
Westbrook has done it once. It was also happened this year. And in just in NBA history, it's only been done 9 times.
That's mental.
And 9 times by 6 players. Harden has 2. Will Chamberlain has 2. Elgin Baylor has 2. Westbrook has 1. Abdul-Jabbar has 1. And Richie Gurin has 1.
That's crazy. Who'd have thought at this point last year, at this late in the season, around All-Star break last year, that the two most dominant point guards in the NBA this year would be Russell Westbrook and James Harden, of all people. You know, Steph Curry, historic pace, all these people. And it's Harden that is stealing the show this year. He's probably the runaway MVP. The only guy that competes is, like you said, the other guy, Westbrook.
Yeah, but I think the edge goes to James Harden right now. He also matched Oscar Robertson's single-season record of 5 40-point triple-doubles.
Wow.
And he joins the Big O as the only players in NBA history to record at least 1,400 points, 400 rebounds, and 500 assists through their first 50 games. The Big O did it 3 times in the 62, 64, and 65.
Unbelievable.
Yep. And James Harden has been killing it. He scored or assisted on 80 of Houston's 123 points. They're 12-2 when he has a triple-double. And he has 14 triple-doubles this season alone, matching Hakeem Olajuwon's total in 16 seasons with the Rockets.
You still think D'Antoni should be coach of the year? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I think so.
With a bullet.
Remember, you guys can get a hold of us by email at the3inthekey@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at 3 in the Key. Follow on Twitter at BasketPod. On Instagram at the3inthekey. And you can listen to each and every episode on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and of course, on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Make sure to rate and review us on iTunes as well. And you can check out our website, 3inthekey.ca. Today's program, the All-Star Reserves, are announced. We put our picks together last week. We talk about that and who got picked. 3 guys making their first time All-Star selections. We talked with Lucas Han, the editor-in-chief of SB Nation's Clips Nation, covering the Los Angeles Clippers. Do they move Chris Paul? Do they move Blake Griffin? Do they keep them both?
Do they go and get a guy like Melo? I'm really looking forward to this one, talking about the Clippers. We've been kind of watching this garbage fire from a distance all season long, and I'm excited to see some moves happen. What are they going to do before the season ends on restricted free agency?
Yeah, they're on a tough stretch of games right now without Chris Paul. They're 3-8 without him in the lineup, so that is obviously tough for them. What's going on in Chicago, Dave?
Oh, my Lord. Can you believe that? The ranting, the raving. They are going to literally take their two best players, Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, off the bench for Friday's game. Isn't that insane?
They did that.
Yeah, I know.
Jimmy Butler finished with 3 points on like 1-for-13 shooting or something crazy like that.
You know what? If you're the coach, though, Fred Hoiberg, you got to send a message. You can't be having your players go off like that.
Listen, Jimmy Butler's still the best player on that team.
Without question.
One. Two. He's been talking to the media a lot this season about what's going on in that locker room and how he feels about the team because they're not getting after it each and every game. Which is understandable, I guess, because as a competitor, you want to go out there and win every single one. But I wouldn't be surprised if they move Wade.
I gotta be honest.
I wouldn't move Butler, but, I mean, nobody's safe, it looks like, in Chicago. I think Rondo's gone as well.
He posted
something on Instagram calling out those two guys for talking to the media.
Yeah, I think Rondo's just kind of fighting back and forth, though. That's obviously not a good situation in Chicago. I actually found Wade's comments to be kind of refreshing to say, listen, I'm 35. I've got 3 championships. These guys need to want it more. I don't think that that's going over the line. I think that that's appropriate. He didn't want to come to a team that was just going to mail it in every night. He came here because he wanted to play in his home and be around his family and maybe push for a championship in Chicago. I didn't think it was possible.
Well, not this season. Obviously, he said that wasn't the expectation. The expectation was to get them back to the playoffs because they had missed it last year, right? Just missing out on the postseason. So that was... that was his goal, and man, it hasn't gone south so fast.
Yeah, they've got a rotten apple in Chi-Town. Maybe it's the time to move Butler and get some assets and just start from scratch.
Boston would probably be calling.
I'm sure. Get that boss, that Brooklyn pick.
I don't know if Danny Ainge wants to get rid of that.
You think you would have to get a guy
of
like
course,
Jimmy
to
Butler?
Get a guy like Butler, I think you would have to throw it in there, and that would... that
take
would
your
obviously,
pick, Crowder, Bradley, something like that.
Yeah, depending on how much you have to give up, but getting Butler... you'd be very, very good and probably could push to the East Finals. I'm not saying that they'll be able to beat the Cavs just yet, the Celtics.
I actually think Butler in Boston would be a great fit, too, because he matches their defensive style and their energy. I just think he'd be a better fit than a guy like, say, Blake Griffin or Melo. I think that Butler would be an unbelievable choice in that. But they got to get him, right? They have to be able to sweeten the pot for Chicago to be interested.
Yeah, and talking about moves, LeBron came out and
he's like, not happy.
He's like, we need another playmaker. But how much help do you need, LeBron James?
I know, seriously. You just brought in Kyle Korver.
Yeah, you're just playing Brian and Kyle Korver, an excellent shooter, obviously not a playmaker. But A, how much help do you need? B, why would you say that to the media? That's kind of like calling out your teammates and saying you guys are not good enough.
Whoever's
on this squad, like especially the younger guys, you don't do that. If you want to have that kind of conversation, we know LeBron runs the organization from top to bottom, of course. I'm pretty sure it's not a far walk down the hall to the owner's office to try to tell him to go out and get a player. But there was a crazy stat out two days ago that, you know, they have the highest salary in the league,
yep,
and they're paying a huge luxury tax bill, and yet they still lost $40 million in operations last season on that title-winning run.
It's crazy. It's like the Miami. It's Miami went through the same thing when they were winning their championships. They had a couple years where they were in the red, and you're surprised. You're looking like, how does a team this successful with this much appeal
the team is in
money?
Red, but let me tell you who's in the green. That's LeBron making so much money off...
With these expiring contracts, these player options, I mean, he makes more and more money every year. And so for this guy to be calling out...
off the court, too.
Exactly. So for him to be calling out the whole league, I find it to be a little bit, I don't know, off base, off-putting a little bit. I actually, like I said, I liked Wade's comments more because he's trying to get his team to perform better. He's not saying management isn't doing their job bringing in more players. Well, guess what? The only trade that's happened recently was the Cavs bringing Kyle Korver, which is a great move. They are making the moves necessary to compete. You got to go out there on the floor and make it happen.
Yes, you got to go out on the floor and make it happen.
Playmaking's your job, LeBron. I mean, we need Will here because Will defends LeBron. And me and you, we typically pile on.
No, I'm not. I mean, the guy is great. I watch Cavs games all the time because LeBron is amazing. The players that surround him are great. But you have a really good team. Do you honestly just want to keep adding and adding and adding players like... To that extent, I get he's in his 14th season. He's played a ton of minutes. I mean, he hasn't really showed signs of decline, but he wants to win as many titles, I guess, as he can in the time that he has left. Is he aiming for a certain age that he wants to retire at and start getting into other things? Maybe there's some other questions here. Yep. But we'll see what the Cavs do. It should be interesting to see what they go out and get. Obviously, they clearly need a playmaker, according to GM LeBron James. And later on as well, Dave will bring you at least the top 10 on his first big board of the season for
the
college
professor.
Hoops. The professor is back in town.
Can I have a look at college hoops and look at the draft? You know, I got a couple guys that I like. It's going to be an incredible draft year. Like
very deep.
League-changing possible draft here. We're looking at a very Carmelo LeBron-ish kind of draft here. If you talk to me, I think it's going to be just dominant, loaded with good point guards, wings, just the kind of things that are really going to spice up the NBA next year.
It should be interesting, and Dave will bring you guys that a little later on in the show, his top 10. Now, the All-Star Reserves were announced a few days ago, and we'll start with the West. Listen, I'm not trying to toot my horn here or anything like that.
Well.
I had them all right except for one. Russell Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Mark Gasol, Gordon Hayward, all of them I picked. And the other one, DeAndre Jordan. I picked his teammate, Chris Paul, the other Clipper I thought who should have made it. And I don't know why he didn't make it. He's playing like an all-star. I get he's injured, but
he's
an all-star, and you just replace him.
That's
I don't
me
get
too.
Why DeAndre's there. And you brought this point up, Dave, off air, and you said if you're going to take the defensive center, and it should be Rudy Gobert.
I agree. I do think that Rudy Gobert has had a better season than DeAndre. You look at DeAndre's numbers, they are up in certain areas, but I think Rudy Gobert, and this was the argument I made on last week's show, is I think he's been the MVP on Utah this year, not Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward's been fantastic, and he's been shooting better than he has in his career. His points are up. I just think Rudy Gobert is the straw that stirs the drink on that team. He's a defensive presence. He protects the rim better than any player in the NBA.
And that should be
noted.
And obviously you can make a case for CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard, the backcourt in Portland.
Mike Conley, another guy who didn't make the team as well. It's just there's too many good players. That's the problem. You can't go wrong with this team. Picking DeAndre is still a great pick.
I wouldn't call it great, but I get it.
The only pick I don't like in this whole All-Star is Kyrie Irving as a starter. It's the only one that really, really grinds my gears.
I mean, Russell Westbrook should be a starter, too.
Absolutely. You can make an argument for Kyle Lowry or John Wall ahead of him, too, I think. So.
Yeah, but I'm talking in the West over Curry, Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
Moving on to the East, though, now. The reserves, Kevin Love, Isaiah Thomas, Kyle Lowry, John Wall, Paul Millsap, Paul George, all guys I had. The guy that made it in his first selection, Kemba Walker. I had Joel Embiid.
I had Kemba.
You had Kemba. Kemba deserves it, obviously,
for sure.
Of course. Great. He's had a great season. The Hornets are fighting for a playoff position. They're in there.
Yeah, I think that's probably the reason, is that he's done this for 2 or 3 years in a row, willed the Hornets into a position where they're doing something when most people didn't think they would.
He's averaging a career-high 23 points per game, and he's the first All-Star selection for Charlotte since Gerald Wallace in the 09-10 season. So, 6-7 years ago. That is good for Kemba Walker, and he deserves it. He's a joy to watch.
Our pal friend of the show, Dave Brown, is a huge Kemba Walker guy. He's been talking up this guy for 2 or 3 years, and I felt like if I didn't put him in my reserves, I'd be letting one of our great listeners down. So Dave Brown gets the assist on that selection.
He deserves it. Joel Embiid then tweeted, he's like, once again, the popular vote.
Well done. Honestly, this guy's social media game is on point. He's so phenomenal.
He is the best social media follow in the NBA by far. If you do not follow Joel Embiid,
get on it.
Seriously.
He can relate to the plight of Hillary Clinton and the
Yeah, exactly.
Popular vote. Oh man, poor Joel. He'll make it though. He'll be there lots of years.
Oh, Joel Embiid for sure. He's probably a lock next season with the fans.
They don't like giving it to rookies. They don't even like giving it to young players. Like Gobert just got snubbed. Porzingis is another guy that didn't get in.
And Gobert did get snubbed, and then Bleacher Report, I believe it was, put a picture up on their Instagram or Twitter or whatever of the snub team.
Yeah, the all snubs.
The all snubs. So it was like Mike Conley, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, Karl Anthony Towns was on there.
Maybe McCollum.
I think McCollum was on there.
Oh, yeah.
I think there was another big man on there. And then Rudy Gobert commented and he's like, I got snubbed from the snub team.
And he, to me, he's the most obvious guy that should be on this All-Star. I don't know. I've watched a lot of Utah games. And if you, I know Utah isn't the favorite league pass destination for most people, but they're a team they're a team that's worth watching, especially when George Hill plays.
Do you agree with the reserves that the assistant coaches picked for both conferences once again in the East? Paul George, Kevin Love, Isaiah Thomas, Kemba Walker making his first selection, Paul Millsap, Kyle Lowry of the Toronto Raptors, of course, and John Wall for the Eastern Conference. I think it's a pretty good squad. And for the West, Russell Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Marc Gasol, DeAndre Jordan, Gordon Hayward, both making their first selection in the All-Star game. Do you agree with the reserves that the associate and assistant coaches have picked for this season's All-Star game? Remember, the email is the3nikki@gmail.com. Let us know if you agree or if you disagree or who you should or who you think should be in there instead of them.
Zaza.
I think Zaza is going to be a popular one that's going to come up in our inbox. Next, we speak with Lucas Han of the editor-in-chief of SB Nation's Clips Nation, covering the Clippers. A lot to discuss there, including DeAndre Jordan making his first All-Star selection. We'll be back with that.
I haven't thought once about that, to be honest with you. You know, so I hear it. I hear all the rhetoric that's going on out there. And I still come to work every day and play and bust my ass. Try not to worry about it.
Welcome back to Three in the Key.
Hello and welcome back inside the key. Elias Elzane alongside Dave Tripp. And we are joined now by Lucas Han of the editor-in-chief of SB Nation's Clips Nation, covering the Los Angeles Clippers, who are without their general, Chris Paul, who's out for 6 to 8 weeks, that torn ligament in his left thumb. They're 3-8 without Chris Paul in the lineup. 30-17 in fourth in the Western Conference with the Jazz right behind them. Lucas, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Right away, I want to ask, I don't know if you're going to have the answer to this question, but it seems like the Clippers can't catch a break. Why?
I don't know if there's a good answer to that. It's just, I mean, I guess a combination of luck, and then to an extent, I think you have to say at this point that Blake Griffin and Chris Paul might be a little more injury prone than your average player, but it's just that and luck and timing. Sometimes things happen at good times and sometimes they happen at the wrong time.
All right. They're in a tough stretch right now of games. Like they're an 11-game stretch. 10 of them are on the road, and they'll face 7 of them with winning records, including the Warriors twice with that first matchup tonight. How do they manage this next stretch of basketball without Paul, with now Griffin back? How do they manage and go about this tough stretch?
They really, you know, and Doc Rivers has talked about this. When you go through a tough patch like this, and you're missing players, and game in and game out, you're probably not favored to win, you kind of have to throw away your long-term perspective. You can't worry about how many games are we behind the Houston Rockets, because when you start worrying about that, you're going to fail, because the Clippers are going to lose ground in the playoff race in this upcoming tough stretch. But if they can just focus on what's our game plan, how can we beat the Warriors tonight? And then if they lose, and they probably will lose without Chris Paul against the Warriors, don't fret about what it does to the seeding. Just turn to the next game. They've got Phoenix next Tuesday. Okay, what can we do to beat Phoenix tonight? How can we get this one win? They go through the stretch like that, they're not going to win every game, but they're going to be able to get wins in places like Utah and Charlotte, where if you get so psyched out in the big picture, you might go on a huge losing streak.
So you mentioned Utah. They're actually right on the Clippers' heels right now in the Western Conference. Going into this season, did you think that the Clippers would be right in the middle of the fight for the Western Conference? You got the Thunder catching up, a lot of teams pressing. Did you expect them to be behind the Rockets in the standings?
No, I didn't, but I think it's a combination of a couple things. First of all, the Rockets had a really hot stretch. They went like 19-2 in 21 games, and since then they've cooled off. They're 4-6 in their last 10. So the Clippers and the Rockets are actually pretty close, and if the Clippers were healthy, if they had missed Chris Paul and Blake Griffin for so much time, they'd be ahead of the Rockets right now. The Clippers are, I think, 27-9 in games when Chris Paul plays. So if you just reflect that ratio, you know, that winning percentage, they'd be a few games ahead of the Rockets if they'd been able to stay healthy. Obviously, you know, you can say if this, if that, you can qualify anything. But, yeah, it's disappointing to see them behind the Rockets, but you definitely understand why. And I think Utah is a team that a lot of people thought would be up in that top five conversation. So that's not too shocking.
So at the end of the season, the Clippers are going to be in a situation with a few big names becoming unrestricted free agents. Obviously, you've seen them dominate with Paul in the lineup, regardless of who else is healthy. Do you think that Paul's the guy that they invest in, or do you think that they're going to make an effort to keep everybody in the fold? Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, who do you think is the guy that they build around going forward?
I think they have to try to keep everybody. Just when you look at the realities of their salary cap situation, they don't have room to re-sign Chris Paul and add a different star player. If they re-sign Chris Paul, they can only use Blake Griffin's bird rights to bring him back. You're not going to get anyone else as good as Blake Griffin with the limited amount of cap space they'd have. And at that point, you're looking at, okay, we've got Chris and Blake and DeAndre. You can either go sign a minimum salary shooting guard or you can bring J.J. Redick back. So I do think that when all is said and done, I think those three guys, Paul, Redick, and Griffin, are all going to be back with the Clippers next season.
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought maybe they would let one of them go or try to take a different direction personally because, you know, Paul in his sixth season, the team has never made the Western Conference Finals, or at least with Chris Paul and his tenure there. Do they have to go out and make a move at this deadline from now to the deadline? We've heard Carmelo Anthony in the latest rumor mill of one of the destinations he'd like to go to is the Clippers. Do they gotta make a move just in general to get better in the Western Conference to try to get to at least the West or the Finals? Or B, does it have to be a superstar like Melo or someone else to get him over that hump?
Well, you said the key words right there in your question. You said get better. The Clippers aren't going to change just to change. You know, they've had offers on the table forever. You know, Blake Griffin for Gallinari and Wilson Chandler. Blake Griffin for Aaron Gordon. Blake Griffin for Melo in past years. And the Clippers have, even though they feel the pressure of this group getting stale and of repeatedly failed expectations over the last 5 years, they're not going to make their team worse just because they're antsy. That being said, because they're antsy, they're looking to capitalize on any opportunity they have to make the team better. And so you could see a minor, you know, I don't think the Clippers stand pat. I think they'll at least try to swing a minor trade. Doc Rivers has really been going after PJ Tucker from the Suns, who has an expiring contract. But even if that, you know, whatever happens with that, with this whole Carmelo Anthony thing, when the Clippers now have an opportunity to really move the needle with a guy like Carmelo, gives you a far better chance of getting the three seed, a far better chance of making the Western Conference Finals, a far better chance of, you know, whatever they're going to do against the Warriors when they get there. I still don't think they're better than the Warriors if they get Carmelo, but they put up a better fight, maybe. They have a better chance of an upset. So that's a move that, you know, the Clippers are really interested in something like that. They don't want to trade Blake Griffin for pieces, but if they can consolidate and really make their team better, they're all over it.
So what do you think if, let's say they lose a few games here in this stretch and they decide they want to make a big move, and it is a guy like Carmelo Anthony, what do you think the Clippers would have to get up to make that happen? I imagine it'd have to be a three-team trade, but what assets do the Clippers have that they'd be willing to trade at the deadline this year?
Well, first of all, I don't think that the Clippers' record in these coming three games, five games, 10 games, I don't think that influences them when it comes to trades, because right now they're really just biding their time, winning as many games as they can, a game here, a game there, while they wait for Chris Paul to get back. But I think that whether they go 10-0 in the next 10 games or lose all 10 of them, they're going to be trying to make this Carmelo Anthony deal. So what this deal would probably look like, you know, the Clippers really have a unique opportunity here because Carmelo Anthony has a no-trade clause, and he only wants to go to a select few teams. So instead of bidding against 28 other teams, the Clippers are maybe bidding against two other teams, the Celtics and the Cavaliers. So the Knicks are going to have to take back less than market value for Melo because he's not out on the open trade market. So what a trade probably looks like is Austin Rivers and a first-round pick going to the Knicks, and then Jamal Crawford's salary going from the Clippers to a third team, because the Knicks want Austin Rivers. They were trying to sign him this summer. They do really like him, and they want him. They want a future pick. They want cap relief. So you give them a first-round pick, and then because they're trading Carmelo Anthony's $25 million, for Austin Rivers, $11 million, they're getting $14 million in cap relief, so they have more room to add players next summer. They don't want Jamal Crawford's $14 million on their books. So they're going to try to send him to a team maybe like Philadelphia, maybe Brooklyn, maybe Phoenix, teams that have a little bit of room to take in Jamal's salary. So the Knicks really only walk away with Austin Rivers in the pick.
And do you think that is possible? Do you think a third team gets involved to try to make this happen if Melo really wants to get out? Well, I don't feel like he really wants to, but it's kind of Phil Jackson, and it's a battle there in New York. It has been almost since Jackson has taken over. But do you see that as a real possibility that Carmelo gets moved to Los Angeles?
Well, if the Knicks are okay with that package, and if the Clippers are willing to give up the various assets that they'll need to, you know, Austin Rivers is their only player under 25 in the rotation, and they only have one future first-round pick available to trade. But if they're willing to part with those assets, and the Knicks really want Melo out, and Melo is really willing to come to L.A., and the only catch on the deal is, can we find a third team for Jamal Crawford? The deal is getting done. We'll be able to find it.
I wish it happened just for the purpose that I'm actually going to see the Clippers play in Toronto.
That's
so it'd
right.
be nice to see Melo again. Speaking with Lucas Han, editor-in-chief of SB Nation's Clip Nation, before we let you go, I had to ask, you know, this team hasn't met expectations. Is there ever any question of Doc Rivers' job in jeopardy? Has that ever come up in Los Angeles? Obviously, they've battled injuries. They've lost Paul last season in the playoffs. They lose him again. The whole thing with Griffin last year off the court, and then he got hurt, and once again in the postseason and this season. But he's back now. Has there ever been question about Doc Rivers' job?
Well, the only guy who can fire Doc Rivers is the owner, Steve Ballmer, because Doc Rivers is the president of basketball operations and the head coach.
Yeah.
And Steve Ballmer has kind of done what you'd want an owner to do, like an ideal owner. He foots the bill, and he stays out of the way. He doesn't talk to the press. He doesn't meddle in roster matters, trading this or signing this guy. So we don't know. He hasn't been on record putting Doc's feet to the fire. He hasn't been on record supporting Doc. But the general mood seems to be that Doc is tied in with this core. And so if the time is really running out and you're losing Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and you're going to start over, I don't know that Doc Rivers is the guy who runs this franchise going forward. But if you're bringing the group back together, Doc Rivers is a part of that group.
And finally, DeAndre Jordan just made his first All-Star game as a Clipper and in the NBA. How do you feel about watching this guy's career come through the league, starting as a second-round pick, developing into maybe the best defensive player in the league. What do you have to say about DeAndre being an All-Star this year?
Well, I think it's amazing for him. I think it's well-deserved when you look at his numbers and his impact over the last few years, and especially in a season like this year where it seems like the Clippers have been alternating, missing Chris Paul, missing Blake Griffin, missing Chris Paul, missing Blake Griffin, and he's been the steady force throughout all of it. So he's really been, you could say, maybe the Clippers' best player consistently because he's played in every game this year. And that goes back through past years. People are in and out of the lineup. The Clippers are making trades, trying to find the right combination. And DeAndre is starting almost every game. I think he's missed 5 games in the last 4 seasons. And I think it's gratifying just as a fan, as someone who follows the team, to see him come from being this second-round pick who's lost on the court but has so much promise, and actually see him develop. Because I feel like we see so many guys come through the NBA who get picked in the late first or second round or are undrafted free agents, and they have so much promise, and you see them in garbage time, and you get so excited, and you really want the best for them, and they never pan out. And it's really, I think it's just cool to see a guy who was picked in the second round and was not an immediate, you know, it's not like he walked into his first NBA game and everyone was like, oh, wow, he should have been a first-round pick. It took him time to develop over the course of, like, 4 or 5 years, and then he really burst onto the scene. So I think that's cool, and I think it's a testament to maybe that teams should be more involved in the NBA D-League, in roster management, asset management, developing their young players.
Yeah, and DeAndre, first-time All-Star this season. He's been on an All-NBA team. And obviously, he's probably going to be in the running for Defensive Player of the Year. So the year has been a great one for DeAndre. And we thank you, Lucas Han, Editor-in-Chief of SB Nation's Clip Nation, for joining us on 3 in the Key.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Foul going on Brooks, who flops the gap.
You can't fault the Lawrence Olivier, the Oscars. One thing that's clear about Dylan Brooks is, as he gets the boo from the Utes fans.
Welcome back to 3 in the Key.
Hello and welcome back inside the Key. Elias Elzain alongside Dave Tripp. Great
Gizzard.
Conversation with Lucas Han there, the editor-in-chief.
Fantastic.
Wow, of SB Nation's Clips Nation.
I hope Melo moves. Oh,
I mean,
man.
It would be interesting.
It'd be real good.
We'll see how that pans out in the next few days and weeks for the Clippers and for the Knicks to a certain degree. Obviously, if they really want to get rid of Melo with Phil Jackson trying to go full rebuild mode around Porzingis there, around the unicorn in New York. Moving on to college basketball here on 3 in the Key.
That time of the year?
Yep. Before we get to the NCAA, a couple of CIS scores to pass along. Carleton and Ottawa. Ottawa U are both on the road. They each won. Carleton over Windsor big time, 104-54, and the GGs won 91-55. They'll flip-flop, so Carleton will play Western, and Ottawa U will play Windsor. And on Friday night here in Ottawa, February 3rd, is the rematch of their first matchup, and obviously the bigger one, because the second game they play each other is always the Capital Hoops Classic, and that's taking place at the Canadian Tire Center. So lots of people expected.
Yeah, big game.
Probably 10 and 15.
You calling
people.
That one?
I'm calling that game.
Outstanding.
So it should be fun. A great atmosphere. And we'll see. Carleton did beat them down pretty bad in their first matchup.
Carleton looks amazing this year, for sure.
They look very, very good, undefeated. So we'll see how that goes on a Friday inside the Canadian Tire Center. But now moving on to college basketball south of the border with the NCAA. Quickly, just a funny note. Dylan Brooks of Oregon, I don't know if you guys have seen this or not.
He's one of my favorite players in college basketball, but this was a rough moment.
This was a worse flop than LeBron James.
This is a worse flop than that one Marcus Smart had last year where he got shot from the crowd. Good Lord. Like, oh man, Dylan Brooks, you're making Canada look bad down there. Don't do that. Keep putting up your 30-point performances and stop flopping like a fish. That was awful.
That was hilarious. But moving on to some NCAA news, Mike Krzyzewski, coach of Duke, obviously everybody knows that.
Yeah, on the sidelines right now.
Sidelines, he just had back surgery, so he's not coaching the team. And he reportedly banned players from the locker room due to their struggles and has banned them or they can no longer wear any Duke apparel following their loss earlier this week to NC State. That's crazy.
This blows my mind. Not only, you guys have lost games. That's not the Duke way. While I'm on the sidelines recovering from this old man back surgery I just had, nobody can wear Duke gear. That's it.
Come on, how are you going to tell someone what they can and can't wear?
I don't know. This is a big program, right? The expectations were huge for this Duke team. They were the number one consensus team for AP this year, and they've lost four games in the ACC. This is unheard of.
They're 3-4. They're below 500, and they haven't finished under 500 in conference play since 94-95. Which was the last time they failed to reach the NCAA tournament. So imagine that. There's no way they're going to miss the tournament.
They're too skilled, folks. They're too good.
They're going to make the tournament one. They'll have a winning record in the ACC, just struggling right now. But I don't agree with Krzyzewski being like, you cannot wear Duke gear. Come on, man. Banning them from the locker room, okay, that's your thing. The court is named after you. I get it. It's Coach K Court down there in Durham, right?
Yeah.
So, but come on, tell them what they can and cannot wear.
I just think it's really...
Let's be real here.
It's really funny. Like, what a random thing. You guys keep up these struggles. I'm going to take your wristbands, too. Like, I mean, come on, man. Where's this going? Anyway, Coach K.
No more long shorts, only short shorts.
Just hustle up and get better so that your team will stop losing. I'm okay with it. Because, I mean, you either like Duke or you hate them. And right now, they are skidding their face on the pavement. And it's great.
It is. We watched that game, and Dennis Smith was great. We'll get to him in a second. Dave will give his top 10 guys that he thinks are on his first early board leading up to the 2017 NBA draft that would happen in June. But also the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee is going to reveal a top 16 teams in season.
Yeah.
This is different than the AP 25, right?
Yeah, this is like done by... the NCAA. They're going to put together a list of 16 teams coming up actually not long from now. February 11th, the list is going to come out. It's going to be live on TV on CBS. Middle of the day, they're going to be announcing this. It's just to drum up some excitement and some publicity for the tournament. This is the first time they've ever done this, so it gives you a pretty cool glimpse into what the tournament bracket's going to look like. It's obviously early. Nobody's done any conference playoffs or anything, but... It's just gonna give some people an idea.
Who do you think, Dave, is gonna be on the 16 team?
I think a couple names for sure. Oh, it's really difficult to say for sure right now. All the teams that are losing right now: Duke skidding, Kentucky lost last week, Kansas lost last week.
Speaking of those teams, they meet up tonight. Kentucky,
that's right, Kansas
6:15.
They play tonight. That'd be a big one on ESPN. Also, the teams that the locks, you're looking at: Kentucky, Kansas, Baylor. Villanova. Baylor's been a big surprise this year.
Gonzaga
is still undefeated. And
Arizona, maybe?
Arizona, definitely.
UCLA.
I would say UCLA. There are some great teams. The Pac-12 is very top-heavy this year.
Yeah.
Oregon, for sure.
When was the last time we saw the Pac-12 at this level?
Well, here's the thing. The Pac-12, I would say, is top-heavy. They've got three teams that are phenomenal that will be in the top 16, and they might not have another team in the tournament. It's
I just feel like UCLA, even though they lost to USC.
The Pac-12 is very exciting basketball right now.
They have them, Arizona.
But that tells you everything. A team like USC, who isn't currently pushing for a spot in the tournament, just beat UCLA. Even the best teams have flaws. UCLA can't play defense. They can run with any team in the league, but they're not great defensively. Anyway, that list is going to be good to look at. I'm sure we'll have a glimpse into it February 11th when that comes out.
Yeah, Saturday, February 11th, the list comes out, so stay tuned for that. The 16 teams in season selected by the Tournament Selection Committee. Moving on, Dave has his, I don't know if I want to call it a top 10 or is it just a top 10 guys? Is it in order from 1 to 10?
I'm going to give them to you in order. These are the guys that
I like. Okay, let's start from 10 then.
From 10? We'll go 10 down. Okay, 10's a bit of it's a tough one because my list, my top 10, doesn't have a front court player on it until I get to number 10.
That's very Dave Tripp-like.
It's true. There's lots of guards, lots of wings. lots of talent in this year's draft, but the front court is a little underrepresented. Normally, this would be a slam dunk. You'd pick Harry Giles out of Duke. This guy was the number one recruit going into this season.
He's your number 10.
No, he's not. Okay. He slipped out of the top 10. He might not get drafted this year.
Okay.
He's had some injury issues, and he is not performing in Duke. He's a big reason why nobody's wearing Duke swag over there in Durham right now.
I thought it was Krzyzewski.
Well, Krzyzewski may be angry that Harry Giles isn't turning out to the number one recruit that he'd hoped he would. Another big guy, Bam Adebayo in Kentucky. He's had a big year, but 7 rebounds a game. Some people are expecting more. Robert Williams in A&M is a freshman that I'm really surprised by, a real stat stuffer, putting up almost a 30 player efficiency rating as a freshman on a losing team in the SEC. But the guy I'm going to pick, a number 10, and this is the last real controversial pick, would be Ivan Rabb. And he's the only non-freshman on this list. Gives you an idea of how deep this draft is.
Wow.
Ivan Rabb, coming back, decided to come back, play with, Jaylen Brown in Cal last year, and decided to come back. He would have been a lottery pick. Might not have been the best move. I bet you would have slotted higher than 10 last year. But he's having a very big year. Took slow start. He's averaging a double-double, 15 points, 10 rebounds. Very good on a bad Cal team, but I just don't know how he could pass on his upside. The only other front court kind of guy I have in this list is Lauri Markkanen, and he's my number 9. He's 7 feet tall, but he's so athletic, he can play the wing too. He can kind of play the 3, he can play the 4. I don't think he's big enough yet to play center in the NBA, but this guy can stretch the floor, he can move the ball very quick up and down the court. Playing in Arizona, you saw, I don't know if you watched the game, but UCLA just had a handful against Arizona, and Lauri Markkanen was a big reason for that. And I think that he's the real home run pick off of that team, which is really impressed. That's another great team out of the Pac-12 this year. At number 8, I'm going to take, this one might be a little controversial because of my love for Duke, I'm going to put Malik Monk at number 8 on my list.
Your guys, love for Duke?
Or for Kentucky, sorry. Look at me, I'm obviously a little tired this morning. Malik Monk, shooting guard. Possibly a point guard in the next level. I don't think so. This guy's a shooter. He's been shooting out of his mind. I didn't really believe it until I saw him hit 8 for 8 in a Kentucky game early this season. He's been dominant. Not much of a passer, but pure points. Like last year, we saw Jamal Murray set the record for points as a freshman in Kentucky with 20. This guy's already putting up 22. So he's a better shooter than Murray, which not a lot of people could imagine going into this season. He's
Murray
only
was shooting lights out last year.
He's better. Monk is better. I'm telling you right now. He's better off the screen. He's faster, much more athletic. On top of that, Tomahawk dunks. Actually,
like taller in terms.
He's shorter than Jamal Murray, actually.
Really?
This is Malik Monk's problem. He's a bit of a tweener. He should be a point guard, but he's so athletic. He's such a good shooter. He has to play the 2. He's your go-to guy. And you look at Kentucky's roster, he's playing with De'Aaron Fox, who's a floor general. So it's a perfect fit for their roster. They love to have lots of guards in Kentucky. Briscoe's playing the 3 right now at 6'2", and they've been dominant. So moving on up the list here, I'm going to take, this is another big one. Josh Jackson was the number 2 prospect leading into the season, playing at Kansas, having a pretty dominant season, particularly defensively, but he's sliding all the way to 7 on my list.
Dave being mean on the big board right now.
The problem is, it isn't so much of him having a bad year. He hasn't been great. He's been shooting terribly from all over the floor, but he's dominant athletically, dominant defensively. He's got one of these really, really slick stat lines where it's every statistical category is looking really nice and full. But I don't know. I think that this guy, he's not a shooter in the league, and maybe he'll develop into something. He's got incredible hair. He's almost got that Alfred Payton flow, which you love to see going up and down, but that's just not enough for me to take him in the top 5. At 6, I'm going another Kentucky guy, De'Aaron Fox, floor general, defensive shutdown guy. He's so fast. Reminds me of John Wall in a Kentucky jersey moving up and down the floor, but I don't know if he's quite there. This is a very good draft here for point guards. Maybe the best of all time. Four elite point guards.
We'll see how they turn out, but obviously the potential is there for these guys.
Fox is number 4 right now on my list. He's number 6 on my list. Number 5, Jason Tatum out of Duke. Another stat stuffer. This guy missed some time early in the season, just like just about every other freshman in Duke this year. He's been the one that's really shone the most. He's had a couple games this year with just ridiculous stat lines. 3 blocks, 3 steals, 5 assists, 10 rebounds, 15 points. Like, he's just the kind of guy that can make a real difference on the wing on this team. And in Duke, he's never been the primary shooter. They've got Luke Kennard, they got Grayson Allen. On a team where he's going to get more of an opportunity to shoot the ball, I think he's an even better player. Back to the point guards. Lonzo Ball at number 4. A lot of people have this guy right at the top of the list because he is the most exciting player in college basketball right now.
Oh, yeah.
He's 6'6", moves up and down the floor like a lightning bolt. He can shoot threes. He's shooting almost 35 or 45% from three this year. And he's got one of the ugliest shots I've ever seen, but it just goes in. So what are you going to do?
It falls.
It's Sean Marion shooting from his belly button. Very similar to that. Doesn't matter. He makes it happen. 19 years old, 6'6". He's going to be a superstar. This is what we're at now. The top 5 picks are superstars, in my opinion. They're all going to be great. Because after that, my top wing and the biggest riser in this draft, Jonathan Isaac, out of Florida State, a team that has really come on lately, a team that should have been great last year, but it just didn't happen for them, and they're finally coming into their own this year. I think Jonathan Isaac, 5-star recruit, is the reason. He's 6'10", shades of Kevin Durant, 3-point shooting, defense, maybe not quite the playmaker Durant is yet, but I mean, he's a freshman in college, and he's been dominant. He can play the 3, he can play the 4, just another super skilled guy. And my top 2 picks, number 2, Markel Fultz, another favorite to go number 1. I like another guy. Fultz is 6'4". He's got the size to play the 1 or the 2 in the NBA. He's putting up unbelievable stats. He's got a player efficiency over 30, almost 31. 24 points a game, 6 rebounds, 6 assists on a team that's doing nothing. He is everything to Washington Huskies. He's been unbelievable, but I got to give my top pick to Dennis Smith Jr. And you look at the teams that he's pulled apart all on his own. This guy isn't averaging quite the same stats. He's got 20 points, 4.5 rebounds, and 7 assists. Player efficiency right around 27. He's been unbelievable this year. He's the guy that puts the team on his back. And the reason I like Dennis Smith so much is he looks like an NBA point guard. He looks like the kind of guy that's going to put his team on his back and do it. He's got the kind of looks like Chris Paul out there a little bit, where pass first player, even though the guys around him aren't that great of shooters. He should be going to the net every single time. He's that good, but he's a real playmaker, likes to get his teammates involved. I just think he's going to be a superstar at the next level. Dennis Smith right now is my first overall pick.
Well, there you have it, folks. The professor has given his top 10 in the NCAA going into this year's draft. It's top heavy. It's point guard heavy. Ooh. There's a lot of talent. We'll see how it ends up. We'll be checking in with Dave, of course, with another board later on this season come tournament time.
Especially when we get that list.
Yeah, and when we get the top 16 list that's coming out in about 2 weeks. But do you agree with Dave? Do you have it switched a bit? Maybe you don't have Dennis Smith at number 1. Maybe you have Lonzo Ball higher.
I don't think many people have Dennis Smith at number 1. But I think... Yeah. There's so much talent this year that you can kind of pick your favorite in the top.
Well, that's why you got to be different sometimes. Remember, folks, the email, the3nikki@gmail.com. Let us know if you agree with Dave's pick, and let us know about whatever's on your mind. Hit us with an email anytime on Facebook, 3nikki. Follow on Twitter at BasketPod, on Instagram, the3nikki. And you can listen to each and every episode on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher. And of course, on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And make sure to rate and review us on iTunes as well. And you can find everything on our website, 3inthekey.ca. For Dave Tripp, and only Dave Tripp this week, I'm Elias Solzane. Peace.
We miss you, Will.
To understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group, just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost the sheep and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.